whatever. Okay, so today, in honor of Shavuos, instead of doing our regular Raza de Shabbos, you have right over there, we're going to do a Maimer from Rav Huttner, and I'm going to try to get the whole thing in one sitting, so I may have to go a little bit fast, because after this week, it's after Shavuos, so there's no class next Wednesday, again, and the following week after Shavuos, we're regular scheduled Tuesday and Wednesday. Remember, Tuesday, the Parsha is 9:15 and 9:30, this class on Wednesday. Okay, you should have, if you're looking at the Hebrew now, it could be mistakenly doing it one way or the other way. One of them says, Mamar Yud Zayin. You have Maimer Yud Ches. Some of you have to flip it over. Just flip it. That's it. And now you'll see Maimer Yud Zayin. Okay, unfortunately, when you turn the pages, you see it is
because
easy.
Of the
no,
stapler.
Not in the middle. You've got to, it's, no. Not the page, the Mamar. Are you sure? It's on the flip side. It should be on this side, Izzy, unless yours got photocopied differently. No, that's the top. That's the heading. Flip back. You'll see the beginning of it. Yeah. That was done. It was stapled incorrectly. So you want it where it says on the lower right hand side, Yud Zion. Okay? Okay, good. The Rambam says in the laws of Talmud Torah in the first chapter, says, a person has to divide up his learning time in three parts. Shalish b'tar shebechsav, a third by learning the written law. Ushlish b'tar shebalpeh, a third with the oral law. Ushlish yavan v'yaskel achriz davar marishiso. And a third you should learn one thing from another. V'yotzi davar midavar, and extract one piece of information from another. V'yid midavar davar, and compare one thing to another. V'yavan b'nim midav shatorah, and address them, and understand things by the way we have the power to extrapolate lessons of the Torah. Ach yada heichu ikra hamidos, until you know what are the main principles. V'heich yotzi ha'osar v'amutar, and how we derive things to be permitted or forbidden. V'kayotzim are similarly midvarim sholim v'yashmur, things that are taught from the rabbis. And this is called Gemara. When we talk about Gemara, so there's three types of learning. The written law, that's the Torah Shebichsav, that's the written law. A third is the oral law, which we'll see is the Mishnayos, is the understanding of what the Chumash means to say. But the third one that's called Gemara is to really go deep and learn it with depth, to really understand the concepts, to explore them deeper, till you have a tremendous clarity of what's going on. And that's called Gemara. So a person should divide his learning up into three, a third, a third, a third. But then the Rambam in the next halacha, bottom line, v'sham, v'halacha yudbeis mamshecha Rambam, but the Rambam continues and says, b'med, when do we say you divide up a third, and a third? V'tchilis l'mudish l'adam, the beginning when a person learns. When he grows in his understanding, yifna kol yom of the Gemara b'vad, he should only spend all his time in learning Gemara. I know, ladies, don't worry, this will be applicable to you. I know you're ready. You think, oh no, we don't learn Gemara, we don't need to know this. But you'll see it'll be applicable. You spend all your time in Gemara. Lefi rochav sheyesh b'libo v'yishav daitu, depending on the breadth of his heart and how much presence of mind he has, akan lashon. So Rav Huttner extrapolates an incredible insight from this Rambam. L'madlu mitvar v'alol shal Rambam chidush nifla. We see a wondrous insight in this Rambam. In general, there are distinctions between things that are a preparatory stage for holiness and things that are the actual holiness. For example, a Sefer Torah is very holy. The covering of the Sefer Torah, it's much less holy than that. It's sort of like a preparation for the holiness of the Torah. When it talks about holiness, there are things that prepare us for holiness and things that are the actual holiness, and there are the distinctions in that. Similarly, kmokein mechshirei mitzvah v'kein gufa mitzvah. Then you have things that are called the preparation for a mitzvah and the actual mitzvah. For example, building a sukkah is not a mitzvah, it's a preparation for the mitzvah. The mitzvah is eating in the sukkah. So we have in Judaism a difference between a preparation and the actual thing. So now the Rambam, it seems to be saying in a third area of Okamba, Divya Rambam Matsan, we find here in the words of the Rambam, Shigam Besoch Gufei Torah Atzmam, even in the actual Torah, Not the preparations for Torah. You know, you could say, I'm driving to the shul. That's a preparation for Torah. And then there's the learning of the Torah. But he's saying, even within the learning of the Torah, Nimtza yachas b'machshirim l'atzmishal dvarim, there are parts of Torah that are called the preparation of Torah, and there are parts that are called the main part of the Torah. Why? Since the Rambam gave us an order and arrangement for how we learn the Torah, and rak b'tchilas limud shel adam, and only in the beginning of the learning do we do a third and a third and a third. Aval acher kach yivne kol yomav l'gemara b'vad. But then afterwards we turn our minds only to Gemara. Why is there a shift? Harei lanu de'etzam atzmiusa shel Torah hu rak limud gemara. Because it comes out that the real essence of Torah is really just the learning of Gemara. And all the other pathways of learning that just brings you to the goal. Which you start with Chumash. You learn how to learn Chumash. Chumash isn't the goal. Learning Chumash just prepares you to the next step, which is Mishnah, the oral law. And that's not even the goal. The ultimate goal is to plumb the depth of the wisdom of God. Now, of course, Gemara is the most obvious one, but it's not restricted only to Gemara. Really, any deeper analysis of Halacha, understanding what you're supposed to do, any learning that we do on a deeper level that is way beyond the simple meaning of what we're supposed to do in our lives can be included in that. So learning something like this, learning a piece like this, it would be under that category of Gemara, because we're thinking and going much deeper and understanding what's going on and applying it in much deeper ways. So even though we're not per se learning Gemara, but there's a much greater depth that we're trying to take our learning to. Well, we're just going to call it in general, to make it simple, we call it Gemara. And certainly, for men, this goes without saying, it's the actual Gemara. But for women, they'll have what's their Gemara, as it were. Although we don't encourage women to learn Gemara per se, but they could definitely learn the deeper parts of Torah that are applicable for them. So after that underline, that's a wondrous insight. When we talk about the actual learning of Torah, not all parts are equal. Everything has its value. When we evaluate it in terms of Torah, everything except for Talmud is called a preparation for it and not. So that's the first insight he says in the Rambam, from the Rambam. You have, and the learning of Torah, even when you're actually learning Torah, there's parts of Torah that are a preparation, but the ultimate learning of the mitzvah of learning Torah is learning Gemara, learning the deeper teachings. And certainly Kabbalah would go beyond that. Feeling Kabbalah going beyond that. Base. Now he wants to bring a proof to this. Yeshon Lavi Raya, let's bring a proof to this, to what I'm saying is what the Rambam means. There are two ways in which the learning of Torah has been compared for all generations, as it's compared to the first generation that received the Torah. In other words, the Jews received the Torah on Shavuos at Sinai. The way we receive the Torah at Sinai, this is a model for how we have to keep learning Torah today. But the Gemara uses two different teachings in comparing the learning then the way it should be now. Number one, Haderach HaRishon Bekesh, the first way we compare the learning of Torah, there's one concept that our learning today should be just like the way it was given over to us at Sinai. And what does that mean? How was it given over to us at Sinai? Were we sitting on Chase Lounge having pina coladas and holding a Gemara in our hand like that? Is that how we got the Torah at Sinai? No. When God gave us the Torah, it was fear and awe and trembling and sweating. The mountain was shaking. The people were terrified. They were totally into this. That's how we got the Torah the first time. Afli Buddha came, so every time you learn Torah, you have to learn Torah that way. I'm not saying you have to be trembling, literally, but you have to be really serious when you're learning Torah. You know, you can't, you're not supposed to be having dinner, having dinner during your main Torah class of the day. I'm not saying if you're having dinner, you want to look at a sefer, why? But when you're going to go to the yeshiva, you're going to the shul to learn, you don't bring your dinner with you. Because that's not with fear and trembling. Okay, if you're tired, you may fall asleep, you take a coffee, that's one thing. But it's okay, now I'm gonna have my cheesecake and my blintzes and my this and my that. You know, while I'm having my regular Talmud class, and I got my phone here, and I'm checking for messages every 2 minutes, and I've, everything's going on, or you're falling asleep. When you're learning Torah, I remember someone had a great expression, you're bent to the task. You're bent to the task. I mean, you're serious. Because that's the way God gave us the Torah the first time. And that's the way all learning has to be. That's one comparison. V'aderech hasheni, what's the second comparison? Hach tamrina, there's another saying that Moshe said, ma'ani b'chinam afatam b'chinam. Just like I received the Torah for Hashem for free, and I taught it to you for free, so you should teach it to others for free as well. Now I'm talking into the reason why we have to pay teachers. Because obviously if a teacher will spend a whole day teaching for free, he'll starve to death. So the reason we pay teachers isn't for the teaching of the Torah, but for the time he's wasting. In other words, we're paying him for his time, not for his Torah. Alright? But in general, if somebody comes over to you and says, on a regular Wednesday morning after this class, can you explain this pasuk to me? It'll take you 3 minutes. You say, well, I charge for that. So what are you talking about, you charge? You have to give it for free. You know Torah, someone needs a little help. You teach it to him, an hour or two, whatever. You teach for free. I'm not talking it's your whole day, then you have to make parnasa. But teaching generally has to be for free. Okay, now how do we know these two teachings? Hahekash Arishon, the first comparison, Nafkalan, we learn Midichsiv, because the Pasuk says, in Devarim V'hodatam L'vanecha L'vnei V'necha, it says, make this known to your children and your grandchildren. Make them know the Torah. And then the pasuk ends off and says, "Yom Asher Amadta Lifnei Hashem Elokecha B'Charev," the day that you stood at Mount Sinai. So there's something about teaching your kids now that's connected to Mount Sinai. Malahalan, just like over there, Be'yema Be'yir Be'resus would say, with some with fear, trembling, trepidation, sweat, and shaking. Afkan Be'yema Be'yir Be'resus would say, the same way you teach it now. The second teaching came that it should be for free. You should learn what it says. See, I'm teaching you the Torah the way Hashem told me to. So ma ani b'chinam, just like I was for free, so you are for free. So the question Rav Huttner asks is, why did you need two separate teachings? Why couldn't we learn the second teaching from the first teaching? Just like I was for free, you should be for free. You could learn that from the same first teaching, just the way it was given by Hashem. That's the way we should learn it. From the first teaching, we learned an interesting law. You know what we learned from that first teaching? How serious you have to be about learning? A person is prohibited to learn Torah if you're not in a serious mind state. That's what the first teaching teaches you. If you're in a jokey mood and you're giggling and laughing, and you're learning Torah in a giggling and laughing mood, you're not allowed. Close the Gemara. You're not learning today. Finished. Now there are certain conditions that make that obvious. Many years ago, in the times of Ezra, over 2,000 years ago, Ezra made a rabbinic law. The rabbinic law is that a man is not allowed to learn Torah if he has any kind of emissions from his body, any nocturnal emissions, if he had intimacy with his wife the night before, until he goes to the mikvah. Ezra instituted that a man has to go to the mikvah. If he had any emission prior to learning, he has to go to the mikvah. Why? Because an involvement in that kind of behavior, compared to the learning of Torah, is considered lightheaded from that. And he made such a ruling. If you're intimate with your wife the night before, you have to go to the mikvah that day. If you had any accidental emission, doesn't matter, you have to go to the mikvah. That's how serious it is. He made such a law. The problem was that people couldn't live by that. Remember, it wasn't like going to the Chabad mikvah here, which is a pleasure, just go over there, it's a nice warm mikvah. Those who are going to the mikvah means in the middle of December, freezing cold water. So what happened? Guys wouldn't go to the yeshiva and learn. He saw nobody was in the yeshiva. He said, okay, I see this was too hard of a rule, I can't make this rule. But essentially, that really is the law. That should be the law, but he couldn't enforce it. It was way too hard for people. But you do see, even on a simple level, on a simple practical level, everyone walking in the room, joking, kidding around, giggling around, you're starting the puzzle, you're still joking and kidding around, you're not allowed to learn Torah. That's how far it goes.
Does any yeshiva has mikveh in it?
A lot of yeshivas have mikvahs.
The best.
That would be the best. That would be the best. But nowadays we don't have to keep it. But the idea is still there. Really, sir, we should ask a question. Why didn't we use that hekesh to prohibit people learning for pay? We say you can't learn for pay, but that was from the second teaching. Why didn't we learn it from the first teaching? Let's say, just like we know from the first teaching, you're not allowed to learn Torah if you're not in a serious mood. You're prohibited. We should learn from the first teaching. You're not allowed to learn Torah if you're going to charge. Why do we need a second teaching? Just like when Moshe gave it over, it was for free. Why do we need a second teaching to say you can't charge for money? Learn from the first. So he says, what do you see from this? Well, we have to explain when this applies, this idea. Gimel. We can understand as we understand some words of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi qualified the decree of Ezra when he said you had to go to the mikvah. He said, Shetfilas Ezra l'niskana keshu shayna b'regilus. You don't have to go to the mikvah, according to Ezra, if you're just reviewing things. If the learning isn't a hard learning. Upirish Rashi, dahainu b'mishnayis hashkur viv. Rashi explains, so let's say a guy knows dozens of mishnayis by heart. And now you're just reviewing your mishnayis in your head, fast. You're reviewing it. It's like a tefillah. It's like you're davening. You know it so well. Just like certain prayers you know by heart. You know Ashrei by heart, Aleinu by heart. You know a whole tractate by heart. And you're saying it by heart. So the rabbi explains that Ezra, when he instituted you had to go to the mikvah, it wasn't for this kind of learning. If it was something that came very easy for you, he didn't make that rule. In other words, he didn't prohibit you from learning things that you can just do almost by heart. Now why is that? It seems obvious, but it comes when it's talking about getting payment and not getting payment for teaching Torah. Now you're going to turn the page, it's going to flip backwards on you, so I'm sorry about that. When you just turn over the back side. Right? No, you're looking at the wrong side. I'm sorry. This is the page that should say Kuf Tes Zan. Oh, you got the right one. Oh, you got the right one. It doesn't sound. He says, but when it comes to not being able to charge, Ein Chiluk Ben Regilus Ben Regilus. There's no difference between something that's easy or not. You can't charge no matter what. Darei Afilu Bishar Mitzvahs Noig Isus Abishar. Because really, in other mitzvahs, you also can't charge. Okay, so now I understand. Therefore, we needed a separate teaching. In other words, why do we have a separate teaching? Because in the first teaching, we make a distinction if you're reviewing or not reviewing. If it's reviewing and you know it by heart, there's no prohibition. There's a prohibition if you want to learn the deep Gemara for the first time. That's a prohibition. But if we'd learn it from that first teaching about payment, then you'd figure, well, maybe if it's a review, you can charge. But the truth is you can't. You can't charge no matter what. That's why there was a separate teaching. The second teaching says, I don't care, even if it's review, whether or not it's easy, you cannot charge. So that's why we needed a second teaching. But what's the main point that's coming out of this in Dalid? Okay. From the words of Rabbi Yossi, we now understand, we have a deeper appreciation for what it means, what we talked about in last week's Torah portion, that you have to be a melim b'Torah, you have to toil in Torah. Remember last week in Parshas B'chukosai, we said, shitiyu a melim b'Torah, you have to be toiling in Torah. So we have to appreciate, why do we have to toil in Torah? When we learn Torah, we gotta really work hard at it. Why? So he says, sharei ikar ha'gdora shaha regilus, the main definition of regilus, being used to something, it's automatic. The nature of review like that, you don't have to work hard. If I know things by heart, and I'm just reviewing them by heart in my mind, how much effort are you making? To learn it the first time was hard. But now you know it perfectly. And you kept reviewing and reviewing and reviewing. Not a lot of effort. We see from here, it comes out making an effort isn't a praise for the learning of Torah. It's not a cherry on the top of your learning of Torah. Or an elevated status of Torah. Because just something being a a praise or an elevated status of Torah would not mean that we couldn't learn Torah because of the comparison at Sinai. Right? Because we said it's a big difference. If you're learning hard, you can't be in a silly mood. If it's not hard, then you could. So if learning something hard is just an added benefit, we wouldn't prohibit learning it under certain circumstances. The aim of a hayira of aresis vazei shalmamir arsinam enam isyachsim elu limit shalmeos. This whole concept of sweating and trembling the way it was at Sinai, this is only applicable for the learning that's done with difficulty. V'raka limit shalmeos amrinun. The limuda kinesinaso comes out only when you're learning things very difficult. Then we say that learning has to be the way it was given over at Sinai. So what is he saying up to this point? He's saying a simple idea. He's saying we have to learn Torah now the way it was given at Sinai. And you're prohibited to learn it in any other way. If you're silly and you're not serious, you're not allowed to learn. But we made a difference. If it's just review, even if you're not so serious, you can learn it. But if it's the first time, it's hard, then you have to be serious. And you're not allowed to learn it. So it comes out, this effort in Torah learning, it's not there's a concept of Torah learning, and then there's an added benefit. And if I learn it really hard, it's like a cherry on top. No. Because if it's just a cherry on the top, why would we prohibit you to learn it if you're not serious? If when I'm just reviewing, I could learn it when I'm not serious, so what should it matter if I'm toiling in it a little bit harder? Why should there be a difference? Ella what, you see, that the toiling in the Torah is part and parcel of what learning Torah is all about. If you don't learn Torah with blood, sweat, and tears, you're not learning Torah. Just like we said yesterday, if the Torah isn't given over with love, right, that's not Torah. Torah without love isn't Torah. He's saying now that Torah without blood, sweat, and tears isn't Torah either. That's what's coming out over here. Hey. So let's now take a look and understand what's going on over here. Hello, Harambam Higdir es Limud HaGemara Shuavona Vaskola Achris Tov Mirshiso. The Rambam defined, what does Gemara mean? Trying to understand something from its beginning to, from the end to the beginning, coming back to the source. Votzelos Tov Mirdover, and implying something from another thing. Vidimu Tov Mirdover, comparing one thing to another. Vavonas Kamidas Venus Shatur Nijesbam, and to understand it with the ways and principles we have to understand the Torah. So what's going on over here? Is that an easy type of learning or a hard type of learning?
Very hard.
Right? Ubavade shekan b'limud haGemara. When we're learning Gemara, hu ikar makoma shel haseichel ha'amul b'yisponos ha'iyun la'om kol hikiv ha'aliyum. When you're learning Gemara, that's the main place of engaging your intellect with deep reflection to the deepest way to understand the whole concept. B'sam tzol ha'ol tzidar v'tel dover, to extract one idea from another idea. Ubor, it's clear, the Hachdanaka Dras Virgilis, that which Rabbi Yossi said, that you don't have to go to the mikvah if you're doing something that's ragil, something you're used to. Haimishum to limit say, ain't bo kima mida haichia psucha shobachimu matorah. That means when you're just reviewing things, that's like the lowest level of learning Torah. The lowest level of learning Gemara. If you know it so well, you're just reviewing it, you're not working hard. That's the lowest level. She gave midas hamelus omodis ba madrega hachib surah. That must be a typing mistake. Must be a typing mistake, because he means to say that the attribute of a male is an effort is a higher level, I would say. But the point is, uluma sos, but in contrast, basar hakotza achman shal hivvacha gomer limit zush shal regilus. But what do you have? On the one extreme, you have learning things that are your uses review. Omedes, see, on the other side, bechinus limit gemara. You have learning gemara is the other extreme. So you have two extremes. Learning gemara is with all your effort, and review is almost no effort. Skip the brackets. And what about what's in between? What's in between review and learning something hard? That's like learning Mishnayos. Mishnah. Even though you can't tell you're learning Gemara from learning Mishnah, Mishnah is just abridged statements of the Talmud, small, succinct statements of the Talmud, which aren't that hard. It's just basically saying laws. They seem to be pretty easy. But the truth is, they're based on much deeper concepts. It's not possible to not have a little bit of Gemara sprinkled in when you're learning Mishnah. Just like you can't learn Chumash without a little bit of the oral law mixing into there. You can't learn something without explaining it. called Pirsha Ha'ir Torah Shebal Peh, and any commentary is like the Oral Law, Kavurshan Ba'ed Rambam. Okay. And any effort you make to try to understand a Mishnah, you can't escape from trying by applying a little bit of Gemara. Anyways, that's the in-between level. Imkein comes out. Miyachas should call Hagiluyim Demaimin Har Sinai Kigon Beaim Haema Vayir Vareses. Next column. Vazeish Shluvim Hem Bebinis Amelah Shel Torah. And we see all these attributes at Sinai: the fear, the trembling, the sweat, all that. That was all part of what? That's all part of toiling hard in Torah. Umakoma hamuvak shalamela suhub limina gemara dafka. And the best place where you see this when you're learning Gemara. So shapur kaza Rambam, therefore the Rambam is saying very well, shekala bechinas v'tamudah shetorah, all the other aspects of Torah, eina el derech lagia l'bechinas v'tamudah, they're only a method to get you to learning Gemara, v'al kengfuim him dafka v'tchilas v'tamudah, therefore they're in the beginning of learning Gemara. What's the Rambam saying? He's saying like this. Now that we've said that you start in the beginning, a little bit of Chumash, a little bit of Torah, of the Mishnah, then a little bit of Gemara, but that's leading you to Gemara. So that means obviously this early stages of learning aren't that difficult. It's not the really hard stuff yet. It's leading you to the main thing, and the main thing is Gemara. The main thing is learning things hard. And that's what you're spending your whole lifetime, learning things that are hard. Of course there's going to be review from time to time so you don't forget. But what he's extracting out of this Rambam, you'll see the relevance of this very shortly. It seems a little bit technical now, but you're going to see the relevance for this. But it comes out, the Rambam is saying that we have the introductory, the preparation part of the actual mitzvah of Torah, and then the actual mitzvah of learning Torah. The easy stuff is the preparation. You learn Chumash, even though a second grader thinks it's hard, but that's garnished compared to what you're going to do. Just remember things, that's all. You don't really have to think hard when you're in school, in the early grades in school. Really, Chumash is not that hard. Learn Mishnah, it's got a little bit harder. But the real time it's hard, and that's when kids usually, they may be doing well in school, but then when they get to grade 5 and 6, oh, they're doing terrible, because now it's hard, you got to really think. You know, Lahavdil, some kids are good in math, but when they get to story problems, they fall apart. They fall apart, because they can't get the concept. Give me a number, but don't give me a concept. Say that kid can be good in Chumash, be good in Navi, be good in Mishnah. As long as he gets the Gemara, finished. As in Yiddish, they say, he can't halt kop.
No.
He can't hold his brains. He can't. It's hard. It's hard when you're learning Gemara. I remember when I was teaching the adults, teaching them grade 5 Gemara. They asked me, and they were going crazy. Do you think grade 5 kids don't understand this? How could they understand this? It's hard. It's hard to learn Gemara. But that's the real learning. The Rambam is saying this is all leading you that really your whole life you have to learn Gemara. Your whole life you should be learning the hard stuff to make you amal in Torah, to work hard in Torah. So now the question is why? Now again, ladies, I'm not limiting this to Gemara. I'm saying you have to learn hard Torah. You have to learn Torah that's hard to process, hard to understand. You have to work at it. You can't just be relaxed at it. Now, why is that so important? This is the point we're trying to get to now. Up to now, we're just getting you to this point. But that's what the Rambam is saying. That the real learning of Torah is the hard stuff. That's the using your mind, thinking, breaking your head over something, trying to get it. You know, you learn in Chumash, you reap Sukkim, you just have to, okay, you have to learn vocabulary. When you start, you don't know any Hebrew, you don't know anything, so learn some vocabulary, learn how to read them. That's not really...
all information.
That's not really the brain, you know, breaking itself on understanding things, right? But then you get to a certain level of learning where it's like, I gotta really think, this is hard. And that is the main learning. And really, as you get older, that should be your only learning. Again, of course, you'll review just to not forget what you know. If you know it really, you'll forget it. But that, you do quickly, do it on the side. But the main focus of your learning should be thinking hard. Now the question is, in Vav, why? El Shukokach Lama, why are we so concerned about this? Lama ba'emes po'elasi midas ha'melas betar akedekat. Why is the attribute of working hard and toiling in Torah so important? If you don't have this when you're learning Torah, if you're not thinking hard, you're allowed to learn it when you're normally not allowed to learn it. For example, like we said with Ezra, if you had relations with your wife the night before, you can't learn until you go to the mikvah. But if I'm not going to learn hard, I could learn. That's what we said. Only for hard learning you have to go to the mikveh. So it comes out what's prohibited, but if I don't work so hard, then it's not prohibited anymore. You see the point he's saying over here? You know, Esther says, you cannot learn Torah. You know why you can't learn Torah? Because you were with your wife. You got to go to the mikveh. Why? What's the news? Because it has to be serious. It has to be with fear. It has to be with trepidation. But he only said it when you're really learning hard Gemara. When you're reviewing, it's not a problem. So the reviewing, so in other words, what is it about working hard that makes the learning actual Torah? That's the question. Now really, from yesterday's class, if you remember yesterday's class, it should be, that's one side of the coin. You could see how that would be. But let's see what he's gonna say. Well, let's also look at another thing. Look at another thing. What if I don't make a lot of effort to do another mitzvah? Let's say doing a mitzvah comes easy for me. Is there a difference in saying, you know, if it wasn't hard for you to shake the lulav, it's like you didn't shake the lulav. Do we say that? No. In any other mitzvah, we don't make a distinction between, did you have to really think hard about the mitzvah or not? Do we say that, you know, only if it was really hard for you to build a sukkah, oh, now you did the mitzvah sukkah. And if it was easy, it's not the mitzvah. You don't find this distinction anywhere else in any other mitzvah of the Torah except for the mitzvah of learning Torah. For learning Torah, for it to be the real deal, it's got to be hard. And if it's not hard, it's not really the learning of Torah. That's prohibited for a person who's not being serious. So why is this? So now Zion, he says some beautiful, beautiful ideas now. Zion and Ches are some amazing ideas. Zion. Now Shamal Chadorah Kachu. This is the way we're going to explain this all. He says, Ravacha si halacha. It's an interesting halacha. Kamecher samamanim l'choyla v'hisnim oschar yoser godol me'amechir ha'kavua enechai v'sham lo'el kavi ha'mechir. Let's say a person needs to buy medicine. And the person is overcharging him. He's charging him $1,000 for a pill. Okay? And the guy said, I'm going to tell you if you agree to it. He says, okay, I agree. I don't have a choice. But when it comes time to pay, he doesn't have to pay. In other words, there is a concept of overcharging. Overcharging. In general, Torah law, there's a concept. You charge more than the reasonable price by a sixth more. It's called a fraudulent sale. And the sale is nullified or you pay the difference. Now, let's say over here, a guy way overcharges for medicine. The law is, and even if you agreed, you could still say it's a fraudulent deal. The guy could take the pill and say, I'm not paying. He says, what are you talking about? You said going to pay that? I don't care. It was an illegal sale. You could. It only really cost $30, and I'm paying you $30. Finished. You cannot overcharge for medicine. But look at this. What if a doctor, for his services, charges you a lot of money? You know, people who need treatment for cancer, and the doctor's going to do the surgery, this, go to the States, $350,000. Okay, that's not the only thing. Oh, doctor's bills, less, you know. Doctor's bills, like only, I don't know, 100,000. Spends a day in surgery with you. $100,000. That seems a bit overpriced. He says, listen, this is the price. Take it or leave it. He says, I've got a choice. I'm going to take it. And then the guy wants to take him to Beis Din and say, you know, he overcharged me. What will the Beis Din say here? Look at this. Chayv l'sham lo kafit, no, he has to pay what the price was agreed to. Yain Yoredeya, Simon Shem Lavov, Simuko Sheltin, in Yoredeya, in Shulnarach, it explains the logic. You know what the logic for that is? Brilliant. Mimnei Sharofe Mocherlo, it's underlined, Es Chachmaso. The doctor is selling him his wisdom, Ve'ein Lo Damim, and there's no monetary value to wisdom. That doctor, he went to university, he studied, but not just studied, it was a skill. There's a hard skill. If you're a brain surgeon, it's not just a five easy steps to brain surgery. Cut open skull, make a change, sew back up, any idiot can do it. No. You've got to be so talented and so smart. And of course, you have to know what are you doing, things don't work out right. And the doctor has to analyze the patients. It's more brain than brawn. There is some physical things the doctor's doing, but where's the real money coming from? Because what's in his brain? His brain has to look at the patient and figure out what's the problem. And from my years of studying and experience, he can look at 10 patients and give 10 different prognoses. Because it's his brains that's that you're buying. And when it's a brain, there's no value to brains. We explained in an earlier essay that brain power is totally removed from any monetary value. Why? Because every wise person has a totally different kind of wisdom than the next. Take five geniuses and line them up together. You're going to say, well, this genius is just like this genius. This other genius is the same, but 2 points more genius. This other genius is the same, but 3 points more. It doesn't work that way. Every genius is a genius of himself. Do you understand the difference? You can't say, well, those are five geniuses. And they can all do the same thing. No, they're geniuses in their own way. They have their own unique genius. It's almost like an art of geniusness. Do you understand what I'm saying? You guys are a genius in medicine, but the other guy's a genius in physics. And even two in medicine. One's a genius in brain surgery, one's in gynecology. And even two in brain surgery. One has a totally different approach to solving problems in brain surgery, another one has a totally different approach. So what we're saying is wisdom, you can't compare wisdom. It's almost the same as art. You say, well, we have here, a Mona Lisa. And here we've got Blue Boy. Face, I don't know any art of this, right? Okay, they're all the same. They're all the same. It can't be all the same. The artist is totally unique than the other guy. So there's no comparison when we're dealing with a person's wisdom and trying to put a value on something. How can you put a value on something that's incomparable? Since it's uniquely one. And there is no category here. There's no market value. We can't evaluate it. Because look at the rule. When can we attribute a market value to something? Right? Car business. Real estate business. We do put a market value on something. How? We compare it to other things that are similar. When you evaluate the house is worth $1 million. How do you know it's worth $1 million? You know why? There's 20 other houses in the neighborhood that have sold in the last year, and they've sold that square footage, goes for $1 million. Okay, yeah, this is red and this is brown. Okay, this one has 20 steps, this is 18 steps. But, you know, square footage, generally, we can compare houses to houses. And that's how you determine a market value. But what is a house that you got there that's totally doesn't compare to any house in the world? It's the one that Frank Lloyd Wright, what do you call it? He was the architect for it. It's like you never saw such a house in your life. Face, it's got the whole top of the roof goes up and flies around and comes back down. You know, the walls expand and contract. I mean, like, there's no such house in the world like that. How can you put a price on it? There's nothing else on the market to do it. Selling cars. You could pay a price on a car. The car costs, there's another 20,000 cars like that. And how do you know, sell a used car? Well, it's a book value. How does it get to a book value? Because all the other cars are worth the same. That's when you can make a price on something. But the unique nature of wisdom, you go out of the category of anything being similar to it. You hear? It's totally removed from evaluating with a dollar value. Right? So this law can only apply to selling wisdom. Then you have to pay what you agreed to. You hear the point? A pill, there's a million pills like that. And if Taka, if all the other pills sell for 30, you can't charge 1,000. Even though you know the guy's desperate. It's a Sunday night, you can't go to any store, they're all closed. But I got one pill in my house. And I'll say, whatever, it costs 30. You can't overcharge because there's something to compare it to. When the doctor says it's $1 million for this surgery because that's what my brain's worth. Well, that's not fair. The other doctor charged, he's got different brains than my brains. Something that's unique is priceless. Priceless because it can't compare to anything. Wisdom is priceless. When I'm charging you for my wisdom, that's called priceless. You can't say he's overcharging. You can't say he's overcharging. Now, let's take a different example. What about a regular manual laborer? Is there a set value to his work?
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. And you say, wait a minute, maybe it's unique. He schleps furniture a little different than the next guy schleps furniture. We don't say since he's a unique human being. This is only one Moshe Honeykvetcher. There's only one Moshe Honeykvetcher. There's not another one in the world like him. He's a unique guy. Yeah, he might be Moshe Honeykvetcher, but you know what? But what he's doing isn't unique. You might say, well, you know, Reuven, the way he carries the luggage is not the same way Shimon does. Maybe you're going to say that the monetary value for any routine action has no value. We don't say that. Final time of the reason is the call. Okay, I agree that every human being is unique. Just like God says, just like God, every face is different, every person is different. I'm not going to deny every person is unique and different. What really makes you unique? It's your brains. How are humans different than animals? I mean, let's put it this way. We have all the animals in the world. They all are similar to some extent. Birds, monkeys, parakeets, lizards, they're all the same in one area. They don't have sophisticated minds. Human beings are totally different than animals. We've got sophisticated minds. What makes me a human being and not a rational animal?
Wisdom.
My sophisticated mind. That's it. V'ninsa shechachmasa sh'adam hi ha'adam sh'ba'adam. If you want to know where's the person of the person, you're looking to find the person in the person, it's in his brains. It's not how he schleps furniture. V'melon erechas hi chachmasa sh'adam klapei koach ha'pu'ula sh'alo berech klolosa sh'adam l'gabi ba'lechaim sh'nemer v'hem l'minov rakavam l'nivrichid. Then we can compare people to animals. They're totally different than animals. Totally different species. Next page, going to the last page. Now, v'kiyuma hu be'ish lo b'min. And he's established as a person and not by a species. But the Tzomi say, what's the result of this? Kirak skilus ha'yechudish tu b'shich l'orim. Only the uniqueness of the intellect of the person is the uniqueness. Hi ha'mechnis ha'sich lo. Limud ha'yechudish lo mamish. That makes, when he's learning, it's unique also. Achu motzio so mitorish shukum to Tzomi. Therefore, it is no comparison in a market value. But the activities of simple activities of person, even though it's part of the unique person, but that's not unique already, because even animals do move things around. Animals use their strength. So shuv ein chok hayechidis ochelat bilo skulas hayechidis papol mamash akdev kavitzer. We don't say the unique way you're going to carry makes you so unique that it's priceless. In other words, he's saying like this: human beings are unique, and therefore we deserve to have something about us being priceless. But it's not the fact that I do things that are so similar to animals. I mean, I'm sure a gorilla can carry things too. Maybe not as efficiently as us. I'm sure a gorilla can carry a banana. I can carry a banana too. I can carry more than a banana. That doesn't make me unique. It's not unique, even though I'm a unique porter. But still, that's not who makes you the person. What makes you the person is your brains and how you use your brains. And that's the uniqueness. So therefore, it comes out in halacha, that if you want to sell something to somebody and you overprice it, we can change the deal. If you're doing any mundane physical activity overpriced, we can knock that out. Because that's all something can be compared to and has to get knocked out. But when you're selling me something that's coming from your brains, you know, that's where you have the, what do you call it, a consultant. Consultant already can overcharge. Because a consultant, I'm not the same consultant as him. I have a whole new way of analyzing your business than the other guy does. It's my brains. You want my brains? My brains, I can charge what I want. But the other consultants are charging this. I don't care. They're doing a lousy job. They're not doing it the way I would do it. You understand? So, therefore, a doctor certainly can charge what he charges. He can't complain. I mean, it might not be the nicest thing in the world, but in terms of halacha, since there's nothing to compare it to, we can't say he's overcharging. Okay, let's see where this is going to take us now. But now, he said, now we've gone to a few steps over here. We're saying the real learning, what's the real learning? Is what kind of learning? Amelus. You're working hard. You're learning Gemara. You're using your brains. The brains are being working hard. That's what we're calling real learning of Torah. Review is something, you're not using your brain so much. That's not real, the learning of Torah. And the real learning of Torah has to be done seriously. Now we're saying, what's the uniqueness of the human being that he can overcharge for what's in his mind? Because his mind is him. The real you is your mind. Look at a whole day. You spend a whole day. How much of the real you is really working? Activated. How many things we do are just robotic? You get up in the morning, you get dressed, you're not even thinking. So listen, that doesn't make you too much different than an animal. I mean, a little better. An animal doesn't have to get dressed. You have to get dressed, but nothing special. Eating, nothing special. Going to work, a regular mundane job. Most of us have mundane jobs. Nothing special. When you got the chance to really bring out the you, when the mind's cooking, when the mind is saying, how do I understand this? How do I look at this? How am I, you know, I'm thinking of a new idea. I'm trying to bring out a new idea. That's when it's the real you. So how often does that happen in a lifetime?
Not a lot.
When can it happen? It can happen when you're learning Torah. Now, let's come to Ches, where he's going to start to put it together now. We're on Ches. It's the second page. It's a little bit tricky. I'm sorry about the bad photocopying.
We're managing.
It should say Ches, right? On the right-hand side.
Okay.
Yeah, you got it?
Yeah.
This keeps going upside down. This is the hard work you have to do to follow. This isn't easy to follow. Just to follow, you have to work hard to follow. Turn it upside down, this and that. When we say that the uniqueness of the individual is from the power of his intellect, when Melanish said, we're going to hear something else. So the main essence of the seichel that God gave each and every one of us is when we come up with new ideas. Really, you have to come up with something new to say that your mind is working. Right? We look at a problem. I say, okay, but how do you deal with the problem? I say this. You say the same thing. You say this. I say the same thing. I'm not thinking anymore. I'm just repeating what you guys are thinking. You guys said three things. I have a whole new idea. Whoa, let's hear. That's, the seichel is engaged when you bring something new out. Why? Because if you don't have every intellect bringing out something new in its essence, then you wouldn't be able to show your uniqueness. How do you show your uniqueness? Because I have a unique way of thinking. That means I have to think and bring out ideas that are different than you. Because without this description of uniqueness, then you're like the same one. With somebody else. In other words, how can you have two people thinking exactly the same? If I don't come up with anything new, all I'm doing is you told me this and I say, I agree. You're teaching me that, here's an idea. Okay, I didn't know that. Fine, I have it. I wasn't using my seichel. If I don't come up with anything new, then I'm not anything new. I'm not anything unique. How am I unique? How is my brain? Where the real me is my brain, my intellect. So if I'm just a robot repeating everything you've been telling me, there's nothing unique to me. Let's say you have 50 core values, and you just teach to me and I repeat them over to you. So how am I different than you? I'm not different than you. So I haven't really used my brains yet. All I am is a parrot, an intellectual parrot. But what did we say? Well, we said the doctor could charge more because he's a different person than somebody else. Yeah, because he came up with a unique approach of how to remove the cancer from this and that. That's an incredible new thing. The other people didn't come to that. That's what's new. Next underline. How can we essentially come to the possibility of uniqueness in the intellect? Everyone has something different, new, that the other guy doesn't have. How can you be you Of course, you can have things from your parents. And your parents have taught you values. And we're not telling you, see, this is interesting. This is why you find, for example, the younger generations want to do everything the opposite of the older generation. Because they want to be new. Different doesn't mean better. New doesn't mean better. There's nothing wrong with following the way your parents did. But your parents lived 30 years ago. Now you're living 30 years ahead. You're going to have to apply what your parents taught you under new circumstances to come up with new ideas. So that's where you have to be new. You have to be new because life is new. Doesn't mean you have to reject the old. I'm not talking about rejecting the old just to be new. The corruption of this idea is, whatever my parents says, I'm the opposite. You ever had that with teenagers? You have to clean your room. No, you don't. There's no such thing as clean room. This is my new idea. You have the old idea. All it is, the room has to be clean. No, I think it's very wonderful to have a mess. No, that's just I'm being stupid. I'm different to be different. Different to be different is not unique. Different to bring out what's inside of you. That's the special you. That nobody else is meant to bring this out in this world. It doesn't mean tear down the old, and now because I'm different it's new. Because it's not anything new, you're just copying something else anyway. But to come inside of yourself and come up for you something that is truly new. That your mind has come up with this awareness of a new concept. That makes you unique. We learn from this, the mahusu shall call seichel v'seichel, the essence of every seichel, who b'metzias achidus shemto, is only in the reality of something new that's in your brain. Therefore, the rabbis say this statement: ain beis hamedrash b'lechidus. There's no such thing as people studying in the yeshiva without an insight. Klomering say habeis medrash, the house of study, who makam pulas shemseichel. That's where the brain works. And if a brain is really working, and the way the intellect works is exactly parallel to its essence. What's the main activity of a seichel? Who hachidush is the insight. Hachidush b'mahalech pulasa shel haseichel u'begeder psikresha. The fact that there should be an insight while your intellect's working has to be, psikresha means automatic. In other words, if you are really thinking and you are really using your mind, you really are, you have to come up with something new. Why? Because that's who you are. You are different than the next guy. And when you're thinking about something, both of you are looking at the same thing. But if I'm really thinking hard, I'm not going to be totally exactly like the next guy. Because you have a unique brain. I can do that to such a point. The rabbi said, "Shomer, it has to be. Ain't best rish lochidish. It can't be that a study hall is filled with people. There's no new insights. If everybody's really studying hard, then of course you got to know new things. Ain asechol motzei as atzmo b'milu inyano ela b'shas yitzira." And he says, "And the seichel really only finds itself in its true form when it's creating things." When you're looking at your brain, when is the brain really behaving the way a brain's supposed to behave? When you're coming up, when you're giving birth to new ideas. Ikaro shel koach haseichel, the main power of intellect, is koach haladahu, is the power of giving birth. Because what's giving birth? A lady has nothing inside of her, all of a sudden, boom, something came out. She made something new. That's birth. So in intellect, it's the same way. I didn't have the idea. Now I have the idea. I gave birth. I spawned a new idea. You know, this project is my what do you call it? My brainchild. It's my baby. Right? Why are you such a loss? It's my baby. Why? Because I created it. Can you imagine? The first guy who thought of the internet. The World Wide Web. Genius. It's intellect. But that only can come with the effort and the toil of the brains. When the brain is involved in deep thinking, that's not just just going on automatic pilot. We're trying to find something new in the thing we're thinking about. Before you thought about it hard, it looked one way. Mashalachim, which is different after you think about it. If you really look at something superficially, it looks this way. When you really look deep, you'll come up with an insight as to what's going on. Chidush Panim said, this new way of looking at something, that's the birth that's in the power of the intellect. And when something new comes out, when you really are throwing and sinking your intellect into the topic matter, that's called amelus. That's called toiling and effort of the intellect. If any time you want to say such a line, smart without effort, smart intellect without effort, you can't say that. It's an oxymoron. That was a brilliant idea with no effort. It can't be. You know what it's saying? It's like you're a father without kids. I'm a father and I have no kids.
That's right.
So you're saying, I got a new insight, I didn't try. Or right? I'm a father, but I didn't give birth. You're like saying, I have kids, but I didn't give birth to kids. How can you say you have kids, you didn't give birth to kids? It's like, I have intellect, I have new insights without trying. It can't be. Here's the main line. Amelus bator. So what is amelus in Torah? What does it mean working hard in Torah? Perusho, it means eifo hishtakus hasecho b'torah haba l'shem chidush panav shel inyan minyan haTorah. It's your sinking your intellect into an area of Torah for the purpose of bringing out a new understanding of what this Torah is about.
Wow.
Limud shel amelus kazeh. This type of studying. Humash anachdu karim limud b'bichin zot. That's what we mean by Gemara. Gemara means you got all the information that you know there. Now look at it and compare this to that and contrast this to that and come up with a deeper understanding that's new to you in your understanding. Now Gemara lends itself very well because it's so complicated. So many different ways of looking at something. It's easy to come by. But it's in so many other ways in life. In so many ways, the way you do things in life, think about the way you live your life. Isn't there a deeper way I could live my life? Any way you look at Torah, like I said, you know, I've been reviewing the Torah already for 45 years. That's the same Torah. It's not the same Torah. Every time I look at it, I kept looking at it a fresh way, a new way, and I'll see something new. And that's using my intellect. This is where learning Torah is different than any other service of God. Next column. Learning Torah can only be fulfilled when you fulfill it in the intellect. And parallel to the essence of the power of your intellect, it comes out mainly through the new insights. And the way you get the new insights is through effort. So therefore, what are we saying over here? Learning Torah is fulfilled. You fulfill the main mitzvah of learning Torah. We're not saying you don't, you know, learning Chumash is also learning Torah. But it's all preparatory. All this is preparatory. The real, real learning of Torah is when you look at something and you're able, you have the tools to look at it so deeply, you're going to come up with new insights into what you're learning. This is the real Torah that we were all meant to learn. You understand why that's so important? Because if you don't have this, then what do you say after a few years? Same old, same old, same old. You come to Shavuos. I did Shavuos for 45 years. It's the same Shavuos. No. You have to look at Shavuos and come up with something new about Shavuos. Something about Shavuos you didn't know till now. How am I going to do that? Think about it. Go over the sources. Go over what the Talmud says about giving of the Torah at Sinai. Learn over the Pesukim and Parshas Yisro. That talk about what happened at Sinai. Look at it. Look at it deeply. There's so much there. You'll come up with something new. And when you come up with something new, that's what we talked about 2 weeks ago. What did we say about 2 weeks ago? We always get bored of things. Right? Something, we only like new things. It's hard to stay with something new. And we said the great chok, remember 2 weeks ago? What's the law that doesn't make any sense? You could stick with Torah, and it could still be old. It could be Netzach and Noi. It could be eternal, but new. How could it be eternal and new? Only in God's Torah can it be that way. Other pieces of learning, other scholastic areas, once you know, there's not much more to it. But Torah, it's so magical. There's always newness in there that you can find. And when you find the newness, it makes your Yiddishkeit exciting and fresh all the time. That's the main learning of Torah. If you're going to keep reviewing, you're reviewing all the time. You don't come up with anything new on your own. You say, it's not interesting. It's boring. I heard it the first time. Interesting. Again, why do people refuse to review? So foolish. They refuse to review because I know it already. But you idiot. If you'd review it really well, you'd have a million more questions. And you'd come to much deeper understandings. And it's a whole brand new piece of Talmud, a whole piece of information. It's brand new to you now because it's all different. See, that's the problem. We have people, boys who went to yeshiva, people who studied, they don't want to learn anymore. Don't want to learn anymore. There's nothing I don't know. Shaita. Because you haven't been learning with amelus. If you're learning with amelus, you work, you're thinking, you're really breaking your head on it. And you're looking hard, you're going to find something new. You find something new, you get so excited. You get so you want to share it with people. Look what I found new. And every day you can find something new. Yiddishkeit will be exciting. Yeah?
So how is Gemara printed? Because it has to be always new?
No, there's the print of the text. But then, when you intellectually look at it, you can come up with new ideas. The basic Gemara is printed. Now here's the beginning, this is the basis. Now learn it, and now ask questions, compare, contrast, and you come up with your insights. As we said yesterday, but only the insights that God would say himself. Remember we said yesterday? You have to have that Torah mind. You have to have a Torah mind, God's mind. You have to start learning of what, that's what you gotta, first you gotta learn and accept what God taught you. Remember, there's the preparatory stuff. Learn all the Chumash, learn all the Mishais, learn what God says, so you should, even though you don't understand it, you accept it, and it begins to get your mind to think a little bit like God, and then you're able to come up with new ideas within the framework. Not a new idea, I found a new idea why we don't have to keep Shabbos. Well, that you can't do, because God said you gotta keep Shabbos. You have a new insight of how you should feel when you're keeping Shabbos. That was Hashem wants you to find.
Of course, yeah.
I've done Shabbos so many times, but I'm gonna find a new kvetch, a new way that I see that Shabbos is special in another way. That's the point. And that's the only learning of Torah that exists. Do you understand? That's the real only learning that exists. No other learning of Torah is going to make you a happy Jew. No other learning of Torah is going to keep you connected to Hashem. Now, of course, you have to start. When you're starting to learn, you have to learn the basics. And that's not so exciting. It's exciting that it's new information. But it gets to a point where you already know what's going on. So now, where are we seeing the you in Torah? You know, that's what they say. They say everyone has his own chelek in Torah. Every human being has his own portion in Torah. Because God made your mind a little different than your mind, and your mind than your mind, than my mind. And therefore I'm able to see it a little different than the way the other person. But if I use it with the principles of how God wants me to think, I'll come up with my own unique insight. And that's what Hashem wants every Jew to feel. Oh, I came up with my own beautiful artistic understanding of Torah. And that should be encouraged. In everybody. And that's when you ask questions. It's a good question, and you're going to come up with a new idea. That can be your insight, and that's the you that's coming out of Torah. Let's just finish this paragraph. You know, we're not going to finish the whole piece, but this is the main point we've done. So where are we now? We're on that left column over there. Okay, let's go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines from the top on the left side. The Etzem Takonas Ezra. Okay, really, we can skip that part. It's just saying the same thing. The same thing we have over there. But it all fits in. Remember, Ezra said, you have to take the Torah with fear, trepidation, this, and it means working hard. Because that's using your brain. When using your brain, that's the real you that's learning Torah. If you're just reviewing, it's not the real you that's learning Torah. Shaking a lulav, I don't have to use my brain to shake a lulav. But Torah, I have to really use my brain to be able to do that. Let's just do one more paragraph fast. Test. Mitoch kol ma shebarashim lamantu b'maimer. Based on everything we learned in this maimer, mitzbarim lefenu dvarim shel maral b'chus b'chusay. Now we can understand the words of maral at the beginning of v'chu kosay, which was last week's parsha. Akosay b'chusay lechu kosav Rashi to amelim v'torah. Rashi says on v'chu kosay you should toil in Torah. So the maral explains. Appears maral. Kavodas was a Rashi. What does Rashi mean? Shikashem shaderach molich as a makamom. Just like a path moves a person from one place to another. Kamoke and hamelus batora movilas adam midrega dega. So too does effort in Torah move a person from a level to a level. What does this mean? Vajra melus moral sumin. These are hard words to understand. Question obviously is, Rebavadi kol hamelus vishara midas atovas galkimulamulis adam midrega. What about effort in other midos? Forget about Torah. In other sciences, if you make more effort, you grow. Why are we saying that Torah is unique with effort? From Torah you move from level to level. Don't we move from level to level to anything else? But no, that's what we're saying. Rak b'Torah, only with Torah, Yotzeres hi midas hamelus shinimas, does effort like that really change its essence. Because when you're making effort, it's going out from what you're used to, what you're accustomed to. V'nichlas chinas gemara now becomes gemara. It becomes the level what Torah is. V'ridim afurish b'psak haRambam. We see the way the Rambam paskins. Shebchinas gemara l'gabi shar b'chinas mo'na Torah hu kamo yachzim tzorah v'mtzoy. The difference in gemara and other learnings is the means to the goal. Certainly in any other area of intellect besides Torah, effort helps. It's an advantage. But when the essence changing through effort, you don't have it anywhere else. That's why it only applies to amelus in Torah.
Change your own essence.
The Torah, if Amelus makes it Torah. Makes it the Torah it's supposed to be. Makes it the Torah that connects you and brings that love to Hashem. And that's the hardest type of learning. Because you really got to concentrate and think. And nowadays, most people, the education system has dulled our brains. We don't even know how to think anymore. That's why learning Torah keeps your mind sharp all the time. So I'll be Zohar. Whatever we learn, always got to use your brain and ask questions. And say, what did I learn new today? And if you didn't learn, they say, if you come away from a class and say, I didn't learn anything new today, that means you didn't learn. You didn't learn. So I'll be Zohar, that Hashem should help us to have this kind of amelus, that we should really have this kind of learning. And this is the kind of learning that will make you excited about your Yiddishkeit. Okay.
Thank you so much.